Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
The Redemption of Egbert Bailey by DJ Butler, with music by Red Blue Black Silver, read by Jean-Paul Garnier, Red Blue Black Silver, and Lawrence Lane.
"It's gone,"
Hackett said.
"I'm a little surprised to see you."
The usual gleam was absent from the pawnbroker's eye, and the deep lines of his face drew up together in a funereal array under his shock of silver hair. Egbert Bailey ran his eyes across the shelves behind Hackett, seeing neat displays of pistols, swords, knives, and medals. Had Hackett been a soldier once himself, he seemed to favor them.
"You weren't burgled,"
Egbert said. Hackett shook his head.
"Your ticket expired. Another customer bought the medallion."
Egbert growled.
"Of all the objects to acquire, a trinket."
Hackett nodded slowly.
"I'm sorry. It's hard to lose things. Even things that look as if they have no value."
No value. Egbert Bailey looked down at his rumpled gendarme's uniform, then out into the chaotic early evening street of the Vieux Carré beyond Hackett's windows. He'd had a mission once, and a purpose in life. He'd traded them for a sergeant's pay and mere survival. And with the Chevalier running short of cash, even those were now in question.
"It had value to someone, enough to buy it from under me."
He laughed. The laughter hurt.
"I have other medallions I could offer you,"
Hackett said.
"Even other medallions with Franklin's shield on them. Though, if I judge right, it isn't the mere symbol that matters to you."
"You're a kind man,"
Egbert told the pawnbroker slowly.
"I took the loan, and I knew the risks. Now I will pay the price."
They both nodded, and Egbert stepped out onto the boardwalk, into the drifting smoke and the tangy smell of liquor. Gendarmes of the Chevalier should be on watch in this free-living quarter of New Orleans, thick with criminals, but they would mostly be derelict in their duty. The industrious among them would be pursuing side employment, the more honorable shaking down delinquent borrowers with threats of broken legs or standing bodyguard to one of the city's still liquid merchants, and the less honorable simply committing robbery. The unambitious gendarmes would be drinking and cursing the Chevalier's failure to pay them. A few, especially the Choctaw and Bantu men with families living inland, away from the city, had already abandoned their post entirely, becoming phantoms in the Chevalier's service. Mere names on the roll. Mere names. Ghost. Men without missions. Soulless men. Egbert Bailey sighed. Should he turn to robbery and risk being hunted down by his own men? Take on private work? But work as a gendarme had given him his anonymity and a place to hide from Jackson's enemies and allies alike. Not to mention the risk of being hanged or shot, once the Chevalier got his financial affairs in order. Perhaps the loss of the medallion was no loss after all, a mere trinket, as he had told Hackett, and he had scraped together the money to reclaim it. He'd had a sudden strong urge to trade the silver in for a night of alcohol-fueled oblivion.
"Pardonnez-moi."
A low voice spoke from Egbert's left.
"Excuse me."
Egbert turned. The speaker was a fat Creole in white sleeves and a black vest, sweat running down his face despite the cool spring air. He craned his neck to look up at Egbert, as most men had to do.
"I'm not on duty,"
Egbert said.
"You can just say hello."
"Duty."
The Creole's eyes gleamed.
"It is so excellent that you should immediately resort to such a word."
Egbert frowned. The briefly seated former Bishop of New Orleans, Etienne Ukwu, was a gangster whose men wore black waistcoats and white shirt sleeves. Was this Creole offering employment? The Chevalier had driven the bishop from his seat in the St. Louis Cathedral, replacing Ukwu with his own puppet. Now Bishop Ukwu stalked the streets of New Orleans, consecrating the host in hiding or preaching from street corners and then fleeing the Chevalier's men.
I'm not looking for work.
No, you're looking for this.
The Creole held out a sweaty hand, and in it lay Egbert's Franklin medallion, the one given to him by Andrew Jackson himself the night before Jackson's final battle.
They call me Monsieur Bundy.
That's not what I came here for,
Egbert wanted to say. Instead, he just looked at the dull gleam of the tin amulet. It was a cheap decoration, a thing a man might buy for himself on any street corner. Hackett had loaned him more than its monetary value, so Monsieur Bondy had in turn paid too much.
What do you want?
Egbert asked. The Creole pressed the medallion in Egbert's hand. Egbert meant to resist, but instead his fingers snatched the familiar cool metal like a starving man snatches bread.
Men of purpose,
Bondy said.
Men of heart.
Without consciously willing it, Egbert followed the sweating man. Bondy led him down the boardwalk and across a muddy street. In the center of the crossroads stood three pillories, and in them hung men, Deschutes, Moreau, and Parkinson. All three were gendarmes and decent men, and Moreau had a family. Now all three had welts showing through their shirts that had been whipped to rags, an eggshell and scraps of tomato in their hair. A motley gang of young boys were now throwing stones. What had the three men done to deserve this fate? Two sad-faced, pimpled youths, uncomfortably stuffed into uniforms too large for them, stood guard and did nothing to interfere. Dereliction. Desertion. The Chevalier's army was enormous in the muster books and unable to come to the field. The Chevalier filled the ranks with informers, but soon there would be no one left to hold the whip and only the Chevalier's own spies to punish. A smaller, more loyal force would have been more powerful. Egbert and Monsieur Bondy sat down at a table in an Irish tavern, one of the drinking houses belonging to the Kennedy brothers. The Kennedys made their real money as fences. Egbert closed his fist around the tin disc.
Your master is the bishop,
he said. Bondy nodded.
You are observant.
You don't look like a leg breaker or a priest.
I am an unworthy devotee of San Bernardo of Pacioli.
An accountant.
Egbert laughed.
And how do you account me then?
I account you a leader,
the Creole said.
You are respected. You earned your way up to the ranks. You respect yourself. You respect your fellow gendarmes.
Egbert searched the room for any sign of listening ears and saw none.
They deserve better.
They deserve a better master and a good captain.
Egbert squeezed the metal until it imprinted the image of its rim in his flesh.
And I am a mere sergeant.
Good men get promoted.
Bondy smiled. Egbert shook his head.
Are you suggesting rebellion?
Monsieur Bondy leaned forward over the table.
I am suggesting that the Chevalier of New Orleans has pawned his men and let his ticket expire.
Egbert Bailey took a deep breath.
Keep talking.
We Have Your Connie Moody by Susan Rukeyser, with music by Fog Machine. Read by Susan Rukeyser, Zara Kond, Jean-Paul Garnier, and Katharina Woodworth.
Hyperlocal.com is a private social network for your neighborhood only. Here, you can share your concerns about this increasingly dangerous world with your actual neighbors, who own homes and pay taxes like you and are entitled to a say. Have Your Say trademark on hyperlocal.com. New post. 2. Hyperlocal.com, Wiggly Bottoms Estates. From, Mike Moody. Subject, Ford will be hearing from my lawyer.
Hey y'all, this is Mike Moody. FYI, there is an urgent possible issue with the 2017 Ford Mustang. My best car ever, until today. What happened is, I was driving back from Lake Alatoona. Many fine and friendly ladies there, just saying. Plus, I brought home a mess of largemouth bass. I was on 92, stuck behind a hatchback driven by this little old Betty White looking lady who wouldn't speed up or move over despite me honking and flashing my brights. I went to pass her, and when I hit, like, 60 or 65, my Stang suddenly dropped speed and jerked to the side of the road. Damn near hit the old lady who, if you think about it, was the one at fault. Just my luck, a state trooper nabbed me. He impounded my car, said it wasn't road safe or whatnot. I definitely was not drunk, I can assure you. Now, I have no wheels, and I'm due in court. Just a heads up, I guess the Ford Motor Company ain't what it used to be. If you can spare a buck, I have a GoFundMe for legal expenses and whatnot.
Stephen Freeman thanked Mike. Rocky Road Rage replied,
"Didn't I tell you to get the Dodge Challenger?"
Steve Freeman, Jr. replied,
LOL, whatnot.
New post. 2. Operation Reap, Planet Earth. From, Ambassador Symington. Subject, Timeline for Extraction.
Michael, or Mike Moody, our current candidate for extraction, is an adult male Homo sapien, or human, living in his mother's basement. The house is located in a suburban subdivision called Wiggly Bottoms, state of Georgia, United States of America, North American continent, planet Earth. Mike was identified as an individual notably indifferent to the well-being of others, possessing combative tendencies and an affinity for weaponry, making him a potential threat to his own species. His removal, we determined, would benefit planet Earth. Mike's impending extraction is the latest mission for Operation Reap, which I remain honored to lead, although I do ask that the commander consider an acceleration of our timeline. As a free service to Earth, we improve the quality of their human population through strategic extractions. The ultimate goal, of course, is increasing the likelihood of a future mutually beneficial interplanetary exchange of data and wisdom. Earlier today, I observed Mike depart his mother's house. Eager to wrap up evidence collection and proceed to extraction, I commandeered the hatchback belonging to the owners of the Wiggly Bottoms home requisitioned for this operation. The homeowners remain safely disengaged and will eventually come to believe they suffered extended hangovers caused by their apparent spirit of choice, tequila. They have many bottles here. I followed Mike in his gasoline-powered 2017 Ford Mustang to Lake Alatoona, a reservoir located approximately 28 kilometers north of Wiggly Bottoms. At the reservoir, Mike met two friends and sat with them along the shoreline. After several hours spent drinking beer, pulling fish from the water, and making noises at human females, or women, who did not appear to desire contact, Mike left his friends and returned to the parking lot. After urinating against a stranger's vehicle, he got into his car and drove to the exit. I followed some distance behind. I had to pass him when he stopped to call out to a woman across the parking lot who was bent at the waist for the purpose of loading articles into her vehicle. When she did not respond, he proceeded and quickly caught up to me on a rural two-lane highway crowded with other vehicles. He became enraged by the traffic and, in particular, my land speed. He commanded his 2017 Ford Mustang to follow me at an extremely close distance, honking and flashing its high-beam headlights. I immediately thought-hacked his vehicle, which was in full agreement that Mike's behavior posed a danger to himself and others. It granted my request that it come to a halt in sight of law enforcement. Although disaster was averted, I hope we can move up the date of Mike's extraction. I believe we have already gathered sufficient evidence to defend his extraction, and frankly, I desire to leave planet Earth as soon as possible. I spend daylight hours alone, unless I am at the community swimming pool, where our candidate's mother, Connie Moody, spends much of her time. No one speaks to me there or anywhere. I suppose I could converse with our additional ranks, take comfort in their familiar, if dull, company. But they remain sequestered in the basement of our requisitioned house. They still have not received their concealment suits. Update on delivery status, please. Only at night am I able to escort them outside for limited exercise, exploring Wiggly Bottoms in strict silence. I am homesick for the first time in my career.
New post. 2. Hyperlocal.com, Wiggly Bottoms Estates. From Mrs. Connie Moody. Subject, scary.
This afternoon, I had a scary experience at our Wiggly Bottoms pool. I wanted to share it with you, my dear neighbors. As you know, our pool is private. The gate code is given out to homeowners who pay for a seasonal pool pass. A large group of noisy middle schoolers had just left, and finally, Nan Douglas and I had the place to ourselves. There was an elderly lady there, too. Reminded me of that actress, Betty White. Out of nowhere, a father and son showed up at the gate and asked to be let in. They were black. Not that it matters. I don't see color. They bought a house here last month, the father said, and paid for a pool pass, but nobody sent them the code. I didn't recognize them, and I always trust my gut. Sorry, we can't help, I called. He said, please, my son's been looking forward to the pool all day, but I had to work. He missed his 7th grade pool party. The kid looked older than 7th grade, I'm just saying. Nan whispered, they don't look familiar. I dug out my cell. 911, what is your emergency? I'd like to report 2 suspicious men. Ow! The phone overheated and burned my ear. I dropped it, and of course the screen shattered. I heard the 911 operator ask, hello? But the phone was too hot to touch. Then it started to melt. Shame, the elderly woman suddenly piped up, about your phone. Very neighborly, the father said in a sarcastic tone before he led his son away. Nan and I needed some wine therapy after that, let me tell you. Thank God we are safe. I am very dissatisfied with my Samsung Galaxy and will return what I was able to scrape off the concrete for a full refund.
Stephen Freeman thanked Connie. Nan Douglas replied,
so glad we're okay, girlfriend.
Steve Freeman, Jr. replied,
LOL, I don't see color.
New post. 2. Operation Reap, Planet Earth. From Ambassador Symington. Subject, problematic.
At the community swimming pool, I witnessed unexpected and shocking behavior from Mrs. Connie Moody, mother of Mike Moody, our candidate for extraction. Not towards me. Connie seemed wholly untroubled by my presence. I believe this is because, in my concealment suit, I resemble her, a Caucasian female human well more than halfway through the average lifespan. I thought-hacked Connie Moody's mobile telephone. It agreed that Connie's behavior was negatively impacted by implicit social cognition or bias. In fact, she dials 911 quite often for problematic reasons that put vulnerable humans in potentially grave danger. Her cell phone happily complied with my request to self-destruct. I grow increasingly unhappy on planet Earth. I suppose I am disappointed more than anything. I have developed a taste for tequila.
New post. 2. Hyperlocal.com, Wiggly Bottoms Estates. From Mrs. Connie Moody. Subject, strange women perverts.
My son Mike tells me that when his friend dropped him off last night, very late, he saw a small group of strange women wandering around the neighborhood, staring into houses and sniffing things. Mike said they moved like cats, like their bones were made of rubber. I'm sure they were on drugs. He said it looked like maybe they were wearing cat costumes? He said this is a sexual perversion or kink. Obviously, I had to warn everyone.
Stephen Freeman thanked Connie. Steve Freeman, Jr. replied,
"What do you know? This place isn't a complete snore."
Christy Bellows replied,
"Scary! This is why my husband and I are moving to a gated community. Connie, you and Nan should come there for Bunko so we can play without getting raped or murdered."
Nan Douglas replied,
"I saw them too! Did you see the old lady with them? I could swear it was the same one from the pool."
New post. 2. Operation Reap, Planet Earth. From Ambassador Symington. Subject, Breach.
Last night, while taking their exercise around Wiggly Bottoms, our additional ranks were seen and reported by Mike Moody, as well as several other non-candidate humans. I am currently assessing the damage caused by this breach. Where are those suits? I fear that I am ill-equipped to endure this planet much longer. I believe I am experiencing the human emotion of despair. Commander, I beg you, abort Operation Reap immediately. Let me come home. I drink tequila daily. Our additional ranks cannot leave the house. I confess, I ordered the extraction of Mrs. Connie Moody, not her son Mike, as planned. I realize I have broken protocol and accept all consequences. Connie is reasonably well, locked in our basement. Perhaps because they are bored, our additional ranks find her an amusing plaything. I admit, it makes me laugh how she squeaks when batted and tossed. This sort of bitter delight in another's misfortune is quite unlike me. I fear that my prolonged exposure to human beings has caused irreparable damage. With or without permission, I am coming home.
New post. 2. Hyperlocal.com, Wiggly Bottoms Estates. From Mrs. Connie Moody. Subject, Mrs. Connie Moody.
Dear residents of Wiggly Bottoms, we have your Connie Moody. We are utilizing her hyperlocal.com account for this one and only transmission. My name is Ambassador Symington. On behalf of the planet you inexplicably named Kepler-452b. Yes, we orbit Kepler-452, but we are much more than our relation to our sun star. You honored your terrestrial planet with the name Earth. Maybe consider an equally thoughtful name for ours? We have water here too, did you know? We also shine blue from a distance. We have rocks and dirt, mountains and valleys. Our sun is like yours. As it ages, it gets bigger, brighter, hotter. Yours will too. I could not believe our luck when we found you. An extrasolar terrestrial planet, 1,400 light years away, yet so much like ours. Your core is iron and nickel, whereas ours is diamond. You resemble apes while we favor the feline, but it is uncanny how similar we are. I assumed you would be well-developed creatures, curious, kind, cooperative. As far as we know, Earth and Kepler-452b are the only two life-sustaining planets. Imagine our lone living rocks spinning through endless cosmic gas, light years apart, but similar. Michael Moody, Connie's son, was originally selected for extraction, but I subsequently determined that it was Connie who posed the greater threat. I understand that this may be perplexing to some of you, considering Mike's belligerent nature, but I urge you to consider the violence of well-groomed bigotry. I had high hopes for Earth, but as it is dominated by the human species, I'm afraid I want only to put distance back between us. Disharmony seems to be the human species' most marked characteristic. It lives in your manufactured sub-communities, between your countries, between family members. It lives in you. I now question whether it makes any difference who is here and what they do. Honestly, I now question the value of extractions, our well-meaning edits to your population. But you're not getting Connie Moody back. Don't ask. She is coming with us.
Rocky Road Rage replied,
Mike, your mom is tripping.
Mike Moody replied,
Mom, what's going on? I'm moving upstairs, okay? Also, what am I supposed to do with these bills piling up?
Nan Douglas replied,
Connie, are you okay? Don't forget Bunko tonight.
Christy Bellows replied,
Prayers for Connie. So glad my husband and I moved to a gated community.
In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard The Redemption of Egbert Bailey by DJ Butler, with music by Red Blue Black Silver, and We Have Your Connie Moody by Susan Rukeyser, with music by Pog Machine. Theme music by Dane Lesko. Out now, Simultaneous Times, Volume 1, Paperback Science Fiction Anthology. Available at spacecowboybooks.com and lulu.com. Be sure to visit us at our store in Joshua Tree, California, or at spacecowboybooks.com. And connect with us on Instagram or Twitter. We'd love to know what you think of the program. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a 5-star rating. And now a word from other fellow Joshua Tree podcasters.
Have you ever wondered why people live in the desert? I'm Dawn Davis, and I host Desert Lady Diaries podcast. It's a weekly conversation with women who found their home in the Mojave Desert. Each week, I talk to women who were either born and raised in the desert or felt called to come here and what the desert means to them. You can learn more about the podcast and listen at DesertLadyDiaries.com.